enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the road that leads to destruction. And many enter through it, but small is the gate, and narrow is the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. By their fruit you will recognize them. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, and a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus, by the fruit you will recognize them. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter into the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name drive out demons, and in your name perform many miracles? Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers.
Great job, Wesley. One of the buzzwords, the concepts and themes that is all the rage in business and leadership today is this idea of both and thinking. The idea that with our most stubborn problems, the most highly creative solutions that are needed, when it comes to those things, we need to abandon either or thinking, binary kind of thinking that locks us into one choice, and instead choose and embrace both and thinking. I was reading an article this week in Harvard Business Review that talks about this idea and how when it comes to things like nuance, and how many of you know that we need some nuance in our world today? When it comes to the opportunity to embrace multiple perspectives so that we might find a proper way forward, both and thinking is really important. But in the most important life or death situations, when you need certainty, when you need clarity, when you need to simplify so that you can make the right decision, you want either or thinking. Kind of like MacGyver with the red or the black wire. Which one do I cut? You want to know. If there's a bomb on the other end of this, you want to cut the right one. Jesus, at this point, at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, as he wraps up everything that he's been teaching us about what it means to live in the kingdom of God, what the culture is to be like for his people, he applies it, as every good preacher does, and gives us a choice. And Jesus, because he loves you and me so much, provides us not with both and thinking, but with an either or decision. When it comes to our forever, Jesus says it is a matter of either or. John Stott describes the passage that we just heard read, which is a, you know, somewhat heavy passage, right? You felt the weight and the intensity of those words from Jesus' lips, didn't you? Here's what John Stott says about it. There are, according to Jesus, only two ways, hard and easy. There's no middle way. Entered by two gates, broad and narrow, there is no other gate. Walked by two crowds, large and small, there is no neutral group. Ending in two destinations, destruction and life, there is no third alternative. What I want to do for the next few minutes before we head to the table and experience the grace of God to help us walk this path that Jesus lays out, I want to talk to you for just a few moments about each of these paths, and then, like Jesus did for his hearers 2,000 years ago, I want to leave you with a choice, an opportunity to pick either or. Each way that Jesus describes here has three things: its own entrance, its own experience, and its own ending. First, the entrance. Gate number one that Jesus talks about, the broad gate, it actually is not just broad, it's huge. The gate that enters into this broad path of life that Jesus calls the road to destruction, it's so big that you don't even know that you've entered it. In fact, For every single one of us, when we're born, we are automatically through that gate. And that gate is big enough for you to bring in with it anything that you want. You can bring your prejudice and your pride. You can bring your sin and your selfishness and your self-righteousness. Put all the bags that you want on and you can walk through that gate. But gate number two is a little different. It's kind of like a turnstile. You go through one at a time. You don't get to walk through with your parents or with your church, kind of like what our confirmands did today, choosing faith on their own. You walk in and there is no room for you to carry extra baggage. It's kind of like flying on one of those budget airlines. Can't bring very much stuff. You got to leave that behind. You don't get to bring in your selfishness. And in fact, you don't even really get to bring in yourself. I mean, yes, you go in, but your sense of self as first gets left behind this second gate. Jesus says, as we enter through this gate, it puts us on a road where we are empty-handed. Some of you remember the old hymn. It says, nothing in my hands I bring, only to thy cross I cling. This is the description that Jesus gives. Notice, he also says, the gate is small, and then the way is hard. The gate's not hard. In fact, compared to every other religion, compared to the other gate, this gate is actually not hard. It's just, well, it's just the one sin that you can't commit in 2024. It's exclusive. It's non-tolerant. It's not embracing both-and thinking. It is Jesus saying, I am the gate. You enter through faith in me, and that's it. Jesus begins first by telling us about the entrance to the gate. The fact that we all start on the broad way, he invites us to go through the smaller one, and then he describes the experience of the two gates. Remember, Jesus this whole time has been telling us what this road, what this way of life looks like. That's been the point of the Sermon on the Mount. And he's talked to us a lot about how it's not the most natural or easy thing to do. We have to do stuff like treat other people the way we would want to be treated. Remember that from last week? We've got to choose to give and be generous to those who don't deserve it and don't even ask for it. We've got to choose to extend mercy whenever what we really want to give is justice. He says that we've got to do things like allow the weight and the persecution and the moments of pressure to actually form us, not to try to run away from them. He says that we actually can't divorce our discipleship from our evangelism. It's a process. Once you enter the gate, you're on the road, and you're on one of two roads. Now, he says that very few people find this gate. Do you remember that? He said, small is the gate, and few are those who find it. The first one, remember, everybody is on. You've walked through it whether you realized it or not. The second one has to be found. It has to be chosen. It's kind of like how we talk about freeways. How many of you this past week got the sheer pleasure of driving on the 405? Anybody? So there's this freeway in Texas outside of Houston. It's on the west side of Houston. It's called the Katy Freeway, and it looks like this. 26 lanes of traffic. You thought the road to San Diego was bad. This thing is wild. And it's not even the biggest in the world. There's actually a section of freeway in China that has 50 lanes. They actually also converge down to just 4 to go through a toll booth in one spot. But this is a good picture, a good image of this broad way that Jesus says we're on. There are plenty of lanes here. Lots of room for all kinds of travelers. You can be in a Prius or a Ferrari. There's all kinds of folks. There's a lane for those who are preoccupied, hardworking people preoccupied with success. There's also a lane for the lazy person preoccupied with comfort. There's a lane for morally good people trying to make themselves righteous. And there's a lane for totally immoral, debaucherous people who say, give me all the pleasure right now. There's a lane for religious people who think they're saved by their resume of church activity. And there's a lane for atheists, agnostics, and skeptics. There's plenty of room for all on the broad road. But the narrow way, well, you got to take an exit for that one. It's interesting even that we call these things freeways. I think it's such an apt description of what Jesus is describing, because we think that this broad way is free. In fact, it is. It's not a lot of rules. Do whatever you want. There's no curbs. There's no boundaries. And for so many people, that is the definition of freedom, right? Don't put any limits on me. Don't put any boundaries. I want to be free. Except that no boundaries doesn't equal freedom, does it? In fact, in order to actually be free, you need some boundaries. I'll give you an example. How many of you have ever played improv jazz music? Any of you, or just been in a jam band, around a fire on the beach? Have you done that before? What would happen if someone who had absolutely no understanding of scales and how notes are supposed to fit together, if I just grabbed this big thing right here and started whacking away at it? It'd be chaos, right? You wouldn't want to hear that. In order to play freely as a musician, you need to actually know the boundaries first. In fact, no boundaries equals no freedom. But when you know your boundaries, you can then know freedom. This is what Jesus invites us to. The narrow way that has boundaries so that we can be free. Because each of these roads is leading to a particular destination, a particular ending. In fact, Jesus says there's only two. The two endings for these are one, life, and the other, destruction. There's no other alternative. You can travel down that big, broad road with no speed limit, no curbs. You can do it however you want, and you better enjoy the ride. Because at the end of that road is ruin. The road itself is as good as it gets. But the narrow path he describes, that word narrow, it's a word that was used for like a pressure, like in a vineyard, pressing and squeezing and crushing grapes so that you could get the fruit of the vine to come out, the juice to come out. Jesus uses that word for this narrow way. It's restrictive because it leads to life. And Jesus leaves this incredible invitation. Choose. Either or. You've heard me talk about and describe now the life in the kingdom. You've heard me talk about and describe what it looks like to follow me. Remember, Jesus never said, admire me or appreciate me. He didn't describe the way of the kingdom as one that you kind of nod your head at and give a thumbs up, good vibes. He says, follow me. Follow me on this narrow path because it leads to life. Not just life, he calls it Zoe life. Active, vigorous, real, genuine life. The life that you want. It's on the other side of the narrow path. The broad way leads to destruction, ruin, bondage, addiction to our sin and ourself, and ultimately separation from God. I know this sounds like a heavy message. You know why? Because it is. Because Jesus comes to the end of this moment and he looks in the face of his followers and he looks now into your and my face and he says, choose. Are you going to exit off the freeway? Then he talks about the people who help us find our way down the broad path. He calls them false prophets. And he says this about them, that they don't have a lot of fruit. And that this is one of the ways we should be able to tell if someone is guiding you down the right path. Any of you ever tried GPS that hasn't been updated in a while? And it takes you all kind of crazy places. He says, make sure you are not following someone that's leading you on the broad way. How do I know, Jesus? Pretty easy. You can look at their life. If with the words that they're saying don't match up to the fruit, to the way that I've described life here, then they're false. But you can also look at their message. If they're constantly just telling you how easy and fun and sweet this road to follow me is, they're probably not giving you the whole picture. Some of you maybe responded to that kind of a gospel early on in your life, to this God's going to solve all your problems and fix everything, and man, all you got to do is say this magic formula or check a box or drop this in the offering plate and life is going to be good. And then you got about 3 weeks on the other side of that, and you realized, uh-oh, that's That's not how it works. Jesus said there's gonna be trouble. There's gonna be pressure. There's gonna be difficulty, and I will be with you the whole way. Don't fall for a false prophet. And then he gets to what's known as the scariest passage in the Bible. But this is where it's about to turn from super heavy to super hopeful, because I'm going to tell you how to do what I never got to do when I was a kid, and that is how to avoid the scariest passage in the Bible. When I grew up going to church, I think a lot of the preachers that I heard and sat under, they loved to scare people with this one. I think they really enjoyed it, and it worked. Because I would read that last part where Jesus at the last day on Judgment Day, whenever he is doing the separating of those who will enter the kingdom, those who've been apprenticing for the kingdom, those who've been learning how to be in the kingdom all along. He separates them over here, and he's going to separate those who didn't want any of it to begin with. And at that point, he says these words, "Lord, many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord." Not just Lord, Lord, Lord. I'm serious, Jesus. Passionate about this. Zealous. Lord, Lord. And he says, but only the ones who did the will of my Father am I going to let in. And you're like, what are you talking about? And he goes, oh, some of them are going to say, Lord, Lord, look at all the stuff we did. We prophesied, we foretold the future, we drove out demons, we performed miracles. How many of you did any of that this last week? That's a pretty good resume. Tell the future, cast out a demon, make somebody blind to be able to see. These people were doing it. And he looks at him and he goes, yeah, but I didn't know you. See, you can do a lot of stuff. You can have a lot of activity. You can have a lot of entries on your CV, your spiritual CV or resume. But that's not what gets you in. What's crazy to me is, how is this actually possible? And then, I love this, and I thought about it a lot this week. He doesn't say, you never knew me. He says, I didn't know you. Now, what in the world is that? I think he's saying, there are some of you that knew a lot about me. You read about me, you maybe studied about me, you did all of the kind of activity that would make it look like you were my friend, but at the end of the day, I didn't know you. We didn't have a relationship. There was no intimacy here. In fact, this was so chilling for me when I was a kid that I was always worried that that's what I was going to hear. And then I would hear things like this. Martin Lloyd-Jones, about 65 years ago, was talking about this passage. And in it, I want you to hear these words, because he's describing those who end up on that day really befuddled. Because Jesus looks at them and is like, you're who again? He says this, listen to how close to today these words sound. He says, after you've attended all your meetings and denounced communism until you can scarcely speak, this is in 1959, after you've dealt with your apologetics and displayed your wonderful knowledge of theology and your understanding of the end times and your complete map of all the events for the next 50 years, and after you've read all the translations of the Bible and have shown your proficiency in knowledge, I will ask you, what about your relationship? You know a great deal more than you did a year ago, but do you know me better? You denounce many wrong things, but do you love me more? Your knowledge of the Bible and its translations is astounding, and you are an expert in apologetically arguing people into the dust. But are you obeying the law of love increasingly? Is the fruit of the Spirit more and more manifest and evident in your life? Those are my questions. Did you know me? So here's the thing we got to deal with. What does it take to be able to answer, or for Jesus to look at us on that day and say, I know you? Oh man, come on in, Chase. I have been waiting for this day for so long. Let's continue the conversation we've been having. What does it take for that to happen? How do you know? Do you guys want to know so that you can walk out of here today not scared by that stuff and like be certain that you know? Here's how. Jesus already gave us a clue of it a little bit earlier. In Matthew 6:21, he said this, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be. Our pleasure is the measure of our treasure. Jesus says, you'll know me and I'll know you if you love me. And he actually says, remember, only those who do the will of my Father get to come in. Well, what is that? Well, he makes it clear in John 6:29. Somebody asked him that same question. Jesus, are there going to be a lot of people in the kingdom or just a few? And he says, instead of answering him straight, the work of God is this, believe in the one that he sent. You want to know what the will of God is, what the work of God is, the way to be known by Jesus? Believe in the one he has sent. And our belief in him determines our behavior for him. So I was thinking about how to put this in terms that we could all kind of get. And it reminded me of whenever I fell in love for the first time with Jessica. You remember when you fell in love? Think back to that. Just get all the warm, good feelings when you fell in love. Ah, what happens when you fall in love? What changes? Everything. You stop wearing certain clothes. You stop hanging out with certain people. You start hanging out with new people. Your time changes. How you spend your money changes. Everything changed. I remember we were sitting in my apartment. We had set the date when we were going to be married, and we're kind of looking around, and Jessica's just kind of making a scan of the room, and I'm like, hey, babe, what you thinking about? And she's like, in her super sweet way, she's like, I'm just wondering what we're going to do with all your stuff. And I didn't care. What? Do whatever. Get rid of it. I just want you. When we treasure, when we find pleasure in a love of our life, it changes everything. This is how Jesus knows if you're his. Not from your silly spiritual resume of religious activities that we all agreed we can't keep up with. It's whenever we love him. When you and I audit our life and we find that what gives us joy and pleasure is working in his kingdom, is living with and for him, is communicating with him, is seeing him behind. When we begin to align our life to the kingdom, Jesus says, you will know. You don't have to worry which road you're on at that point, because your pleasure is the measure of what you treasure. So, what do you treasure today? If you really think about your life, what is it that's bringing you joy? I'm not saying that to try to condemn you for it. I'm saying it to do like Jesus does, just give you a great opportunity today to evaluate. Where do I find the most? What's got my heart? What's got my passion? What do I love? And if it's anything else but him and his kingdom, not that you don't love those things along with, but if it's got priority, then it's time to look for the exit. Get off the freeway that's actually the broad way that leads to destruction. Jesus gives us this invitation, and every time I hear him say those words, I think now I don't hear it with that, with the intensity of condemnation. I hear it with the invitation of intimacy. Come on, get off that road. It doesn't lead to where you want to go anyway. What's crazy about Jesus is this whole narrow way idea is exactly what his life looked like. As we come to this table today to remember his death and then his resurrection, we're reminded that he walked the narrow way. I mean, think about it. From the first thing, the narrow gate, God, the sovereign of the entire universe, squeezed himself down into an incarnated human. He went through a narrow gate, becoming one of us. And then the life that he walked was one of pressure, increasing pressure. He looked at that pressure of people rejecting him and misunderstanding him and walking away from him, and some of them understanding him and then walking away from him. He looked at all of that and he said, it's worth it. I'll keep going. and he walked the path all the way to a cross, which some of you know because you've been on this road called the Via Dolorosa in Jerusalem. It is a narrow path that he walked to a cross so that going through that tomb, he could give to us life. You and I have an option today. It's not both and. It's either or. It's will you choose, will you say yes to his invitation to come and find life through him, by grace, through faith in what he's done, and then walk that narrow road that leads to life everlasting. I want to ask you to consider it today. For many of you, I know it's true. You're on it. See it. Look at your life, and there is fruit. For some of you, today's your day. Today is your opportunity to take an exit. So pray with me. Father, as we come to this table, as we choose now to recall that moment when your life got so squeezed and so narrowed that it crushed you, as those who were gathered around watched the most breathtaking act of love as you allowed yourself to be poured out, as everyone who was in earshot could hear you, not condemning in that moment, looking down from a cross at those who had rejected, who had punished, who took joy in making a mockery of you, and you spoke those words, forgive them, as you embodied the culture of the kingdom, even in your last moments. Jesus, would you let our hearts be enraptured by that? I pray that as we take these elements today, that the story, the true story of your death, would cause our hearts to get set on fire out of love. God, would you give us the opportunity today to take in the grace through these elements that is needed to walk this narrow path? I pray that you would fill us and you would nourish us and you would strengthen us through these elements, these ordinary parts of your creation that suddenly become extraordinary in your hands. I pray for any of the folks here or those watching that realize they're still on the freeway, I ask God you'd give courage now, that your sweet invitation to come to you now, to trust you, not just for eternity in the future, but for this moment right now, God, would you allow somebody to come to faith and allow dead hearts to come alive right now as we put our lives in your hands. We pray, Jesus, in your name. Amen.